This is Fresh Air. I'm Artie Moscoen in for Terry Gross. Every production assistant on a movie set has fantasies about being a director, about taking all that accumulated knowledge and experience and putting it to work, about being the person who is served coffee instead of making it. That was Sarah Kelly's dream, and in 1995, it came true. Actor-director Quentin Tarantino asked her to make a documentary about the making of the Robert Rodriguez vampire western From Dusk Till Dawn. Tarantino was the screenwriter, executive producer, and starred in the film along with George Clooney, Juliette Lewis, and Harvey Keitel. Kelly knew Tarantino, having worked as a production assistant on Pulp Fiction. What was going to be a film about a threatened union strike became a funny and revealing look at the life of a film crew. Full Tilt Boogie is about the gossip and the gripes and the aspirations of the people who work endless hours behind the scenes on a movie set. Sarah Kelly has worked on several other films, including Gettysburg, Killing Zoe, and Sleep With Me. I asked her what she learned from watching directors work.
Well, you know, working with Quentin, I worked as a production assistant on Pulp Fiction, and He really makes it look easy. It's sort of like you learn almost from the directors that aren't as savvy what not to do. But in terms of watching Quentin, he is so amazing, and his energy and his inspiration, that it sort of trickles down to the crew, and he really inspires people. And the way he works with actors, I learned a lot with, because he spends a lot of time with them. And I've noticed some directors sort of sit in their chair and look at the monitor. And Quentin doesn't even have a monitor on his sets. He is very one-on-one with the actors and takes a lot of time with them.
And you were looking to do the same, to create that same kind of relationship?
Yeah. You know, I think he pulls out things from within them, and he takes the time to give them backstory and to really get into the characters with the actors. And I think that, unfortunately, that is rare with directors. I've talked to a lot of actors. I used to ask them what they thought made a good director, and they all said, you know, someone who will spend a lot of time with you, just one-on-one.
This, of course, is a documentary, so you're really documenting events as they unfold. That's a different kind of responsibility for a director.
It is, yeah. Well, it's hard because there's no script.
Right.
And there's no rehearsal time, and there's no take-backs. You know, you either get it or you don't get it. And so it was tricky, and you know, we just had to, again, keep our eyes and ears perked for something good that was going to happen, or some terrible disaster that we could capture and roll away.
Were there certain things you did to prepare yourself for that first day as director?
Oh.
You had a good breakfast, for instance?
Yeah, I had a good breakfast, said a lot of prayers. No, you know, I mean, I had sort of been gearing up for it, really, for years, and I had been mouthing off about the fact that I was going to be a director. And so it happened quickly, but that it also, I had been dreaming of it for so long and sort of mentally preparing myself. And when it happened, I was just actually a little bit numb.
Did you have to learn how to give orders?
Yeah, actually, that was probably the hardest thing in the beginning, was because I was so used to following orders that giving orders actually was a whole new ballgame. And my crew was mainly male. Mm-hmm. And so I learned ways in which to communicate to the boys what I wanted. And,
such as?
Well, I used to say in the beginning things like, do you think maybe we could, like, go set up at George Clooney's trailer? And they would just, like, sort of grunt and not listen and then keep eating their lunch. And then I would sort of rephrase it, take a deep breath, and say, after lunch, we are setting up at George Clooney's trailer. And they go, oh, okay.
So, a statement, not a question.
Right, yeah. And you have to learn that fine line of between, you know, being bossy and actually just saying, no, I'm the director and I have to lead these people.
Were there questions, issues about you being a woman leading a group of men? Was that something you had to struggle with?
No, not really. I mean, I think just in terms of being aggressive enough to communicate what I wanted. In terms of being a woman, I've actually run into less obstacles than you would think. And I think a lot of it just has to do with whether or not you believe enough in yourself. Mm-hmm. And I do. And so for me, you know, my mentors were mainly men, and they really took me under their wing, and it was never an issue with them.
How about being young? You're in your mid-20s. Was that an issue?
Young was more of an issue, actually, than being a woman. And so sometimes combining that young and a woman, definitely, you sort of have a lot to prove. But young was more of an issue because people think, well, you know, how you don't have all these years of experience under your belt, and what are you doing? You're a kid. So especially when you're known as a production assistant for years, that was kind of a challenge to kind of step up and prove that I had graduated.
I really enjoyed the behind-the-scenes look in this film, and you get a feel for the crew that, of course, never get the face time in a film, and when you see the credits on the screen, they go by so quickly, you can't really digest who they are. But the whole group of people that gravitates towards filmmaking, is there something distinctive about this group?
You know, I think that a lot of times these people love, I think basically they have common grounds, which is they don't want to work in the corporate world. They don't want to work 9 to 5. They're very creative, and they love storytelling, especially in independent film. And I think that they sort of crave this crazy, weird, circus-like atmosphere. And I think that even the grips, and as it's in Full Tilt Boogie, you know, you can see that they are in it also for the creative aspect of it. So I think it's people who sort of crave that sort of a little bit more exciting life.
There seems like there's a lot of downtime on a set, at least from an outsider. A lot of waiting, a lot of setting up things in a holding pattern, waiting for the sun or the wind to cooperate.
Right.
Does it feel like downtime when you're on the set?
Oh, yeah. They have a saying in the film business called hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
And there are two states. You're either panicking and hurrying to get something, or you're waiting around for hours. And that's where a lot of extracurricular activities develop. So, you know, you get to know people and you play weird games, and you just kind of, you know, there are hours and hours and hours where you're not doing too much. So a lot of relationships form, and that's also a lot where people end up talking and sharing ideas, and there's a lot of sort of creative time that happens there too.
What are some of those extracurricular activities you just referred to?
Well, you know, you can see some of them in Full Tilt Boogie. It's everything from, you know, doing spit takes to talking about who's cute on the set to, you know, a lot of games develop. But you always have to be ready to drop whatever you're doing and get back to work.
Were you good at that as a production assistant, that hurry-up-and-wait business?
At hurry-up-and-wait? Yeah, well, you know, during the waiting time, that's when I kind of used that time to kind of be a sponge and to sort of look around and listen and ask questions and hang out with people that were inspiring. And so that, to me, was the time that I really tried to learn as much as I could.
A lot of time seems to be spent on coffee, food, iced mochas. That's really important in the set, that people are well-fed and well-watered.
It is, yeah. And, I mean, the first rule you learn if you're doing even a film school project or a really low budget is feed your crew. If you don't pay them, you have to feed them. It's more important than money at that on a film set. And, of course, there's also beer involved
after
shooting.
A lot of beer, right.
Especially on location, and that's important, too, after shooting. But, yeah, it really is. It means more to you at the time than money does.
Well, I would assume on every set there are disasters. There are things that happen. There are things that can't be anticipated. And
right.
in this, the making of this film, as you document in your own film, a number of things happen, from union problems to a set that practically burns down. Is that
right.
Something you know it's going to happen? Things are going to happen on a set.
Right. Well, I used to, you know, we used to actually hope that something bad would happen, because in the beginning it just seemed like this was such a wonderful set and everything was so smooth that we would have to have birds chirping in the background and no one would really believe it or be interested. But, you know, I knew that there was going to be union problems, so I sort of anticipated that. And you can't anticipate the set burning down or the dust storm.
Right.
Blowing through. So that was kind of exciting, and I was glad that we were able to capture that.
The union targeted this film. Why?
Why? Because it was a very large budget to have been an independent film. And I think that because it was happening in their backyard, it was an $18 million film. I think that they just felt that was uncalled for and that it was sending a bad message, and that they figured if they had $18 million that they should be spending some of that on health benefits and on union wages. So that was their reason. And I'm, you know, I also do agree with Quentin and Elizabeth Avion and Lawrence Bender and the people I interviewed that are the producers of the film, is that they were also going directly after Quentin and Robert Rodriguez because they are these hotshot independents that made it big. And they came up, you know, from a $7,000 film to an $18 million film. That's what Robert did. And he still likes to work as if he's an independent.
Even if he has $18 million.
Yeah. In other words, he likes to edit his films. He likes to operate the Steadicam. He likes to operate the camera. He sort of does all these things that normally on a union set there would be filled by different people. The positions would be filled by different people. And I think that they wanted an atmosphere that was creatively free, and that wouldn't have been the case if the unions, if it had been a union show. And so they tried to just pay comparable wages, and then they ended up giving health care in the end, which was good because that was the main issue, I think, that people were really missing out.
So in a sense, the union forced them then to pay good wages and provide for the crew?
Well, actually, they didn't get forced. I mean, when they struck the deals with everybody that signed on to work on the movie, the wages were comparable from the beginning. They were comparable anyway. They were, and basically, you know, as Quentin says in the movie, unions should not come down and strike a set just for the hell of it. You should sort of hear that there's a problem and then investigate the problem and then come down and strike a set. But this was a happy environment of people who wanted to be there, who had been part of the Robert and Quentin family for, you know, four or five films before. And so this was kind of a group of people that had worked together before. They all wanted to be there, and they knew that it was going to remain independent. But in terms of giving health care, I think that the producers went around and said to the crew, if we remain independent, what's the one thing that you really, or what's the most important issue to you? And everybody said health care. So they had to listen to that, and they were able to provide it.
Well, I want to talk some more, but first we're going to take a very short break. And our guest today on Fresh Air is director Sarah Kelly. And we're talking about a documentary she just did called Full Tilt Boogie, and it's about the set of a Robert Rodriguez film called From Dusk Till Dawn, a look at what happened in front of the camera and behind it. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is filmmaker Sarah Kelly, and we're talking about her film Full Tilt Boogie, which is a documentary on the making of a Robert Rodriguez film called From Dusk Till Dawn. How many movie romances blossom on the set of a film? Is that pretty common?
It is. You know, it is common. And I don't know about necessarily full-blown romances, but definitely crushes develop. And they develop on very strange people, I think, because you're working these very long hours and the outside world virtually doesn't exist when you're on a movie set. And so you have all this extra time to sort of think about people definitely, there's a lot of crushes going on.
There's actually a great scene of a number of the crew sitting around talking about crushes and fantasies and who's doing what with whom. I mean, it sort of just tantalizes us. It doesn't give us a lot of hardcore information. Do you think they were being very circumspect because you were filming them?
I think so, yeah. And I think that actually, you know, I certainly wasn't out to ruin anybody's life, so I didn't want too much dirt. But I also think that a lot of it is just talk and hot air, and that basically it stays at the crush level.
And it kind of helps to pass the time, right?
To talk about
this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you pretty much identify in the first week who's cute, and it starts to circulate, and it really does help pass the time.
Were there times when making this documentary that certain people didn't want to be interviewed, didn't want to be filmed?
Oh, yeah. And one of those examples is Harvey Keitel, who really didn't want anything to do with Full Tilt Boogie. And we respected that and sort of avoided him on the set as much as we could. And then he finally did allow us to interview him. He allowed Quentin to interview him at his last day of shooting. So that was one example. But there were a lot of people who for whatever reason, some of the reasons being the union issues, just really didn't want to be involved, didn't want to be on camera. And we really tried to respect that and just tried to sort of avoid shooting them.
Why didn't Harvey Keitel want to be involved and included in this documentary?
You know, I think that the most basic reason is that he is a very serious method actor, and he was really there to be involved in From Dusk Till Dawn. And so he didn't want to waste any of his sort of energies involved in Full Tilt Boogie. And at the time, he wasn't really sure what it was or what it would end up being. And I think that he just decided he'd rather stay away from it.
Okay.
But, you know, then on the other hand, we had George Clooney and Juliet, who were very willing to be a part of both movies.
Well, very much hams, I would say.
Yeah, they were great.
Playing to the camera.
Right.
When the film is over, does a crew get depressed? You put a lot of time and energy into putting a film together.
Yeah, I think that there's a huge amount of depression that happens, especially the very next day, because you've been working with these people for hours and hours and hours and weeks on end, and that's really your whole existence. And then one day, all of a sudden, that's a wrap and it's over. So it's very hard to get used to. And you have to sort of, you think that you can toughen up your skin, but every time it's happened, I know I've gotten depressed. And it's just very weird because you wake up and you have nothing to do the next day.
How did you get interested in making films in the first place?
Well, I was raised going to films from the time I was six. And so my parents kind of, you know, always took us to movies. And movies were a big part of my life growing up. But it didn't occur to me until the end of college when I took a short film class and kind of said, I didn't know this was an option. And then I actually stumbled into a matinee showing of a film called Slacker. Directed by Richard Linklater. And when the movie was over, I walked out into Santa Cruz and realized the movie was still going on and that he had really done an amazing job of capturing life kind of just as it is. And so I decided that that's kind of what I wanted to do.
Well, I would think a lot of people say that, but what did you do next to make that happen?
Well, there was a man who was a producer, Moctezuma Esparza, who was coming to speak to the film class, and I found out where he was staying and sort of marched into his room and handed him a speech that I had written for graduation and told him to hire me. I actually told him to hire me, and he did. He was, I think, impressed with that confidence, and I told him I could make coffee really well and that I had no experience but that I would be willing to work hard, so... And that was the beginning of my career as a coffee maker.
What was that speech about?
You know, I look at it now, and it was very, it was a very college graduation speech. but it really was talking about taking what you've learned and bringing it out into the world and trying not to forget sort of where you came from. And I talked about making films and painting pictures and, you know, curing diseases and things like that, just sort of trying to take what you've learned and go out into the world and do something with it. And that's what I really wanted to do.
So all that, all those highfalutin ideas plus the ability to make coffee, that was what opened the doors for you?
Very important. Yeah. And, you know, it's actually it's funny because you can just make coffee or you can kind of take it to another level and make coffee, but at the same time also really be a sponge and try and learn as much as you can. And that's really what I tried to do. And I also really loved making coffee. I mean, I knew I wouldn't do it forever, but I, at the time, really felt privileged and happy to be doing it.
And you make a good cup of coffee.
And I do.
Well, Sarah Kelly, thank you very much for joining us at AM Fresh Air, and good luck to you.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Sarah Kelly is the director of Full Tilt Boogie, which opened last weekend in New York, Los Angeles, Austin, Dallas, Houston, and Seattle.